Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, Season 6, Episode 129. Let's start another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Koller, Nolan Hames, and Sander Johnson.
Okay, folks, this is going to be a great episode, and everyone is going to have fun listening to it, guaranteed. If you have not had the opportunity to listen and subscribe to one of the newer presentation industry podcasts, Presentation Junkies, you have been missing out on something fun. Joel Simmons and Lisa Marie Grilos are both based in the Bay Area. Hey, if you're not from the California West Coast thing, that's the San Francisco area. And they came up with a great name for a podcast. They have awesome podcast cover art, and they are genuine people, presentation people that have fun recording each of their episodes. Today, we're doing a crossover episode where we are releasing the same conversation, potentially with different intros on both shows. So the Presentation Podcast and Presentation Junkies, we are here gathered together. Today is the classic, absolute classic, presentation designers meet up and talk presentation around the water cooler. Or coffee shop, or maybe it's just a bar. So without any further delay, let's meet up with Joel, Lisa Marie, Nolan, Sandy, and myself for some great presentation talk. After that intro, here we go. I feel we as a group here need to start with those awkward introductions. You know, like when you're at an event and you're the new person on the team and the one person you know waves you over into the group and you have to like quickly introduce yourself with enough credibility points thrown in there so that everyone, so everyone knows you're not a complete rookie. Hey, for those listening, you may be wondering who the new people are. I may be the new guy to you. So I'll start if you guys are good with it. Introduction time. Thanks for inviting me over. Hey, I'm Troy Koller. I'm based in Southern California. And for origin story in this whole presentation thing, I transitioned from print, web, and multimedia design. Multimedia was a lot different back then, by the way, which kind of a twist of fate. In 1999, we're going back in time, I did a show site corporate event almost as a favor. I did get paid, but it was kind of like, hey, could you come help us? I was doing presentation design, and I was doing large format print signage for the event. That single event led to pretty much nonstop events and projects, so much so that within 1 year, we pivoted the entire design studio focus to be presentation work, and I have not looked back. So there's my backstory. We now have a staff of 10. We do full PowerPoint templates and thousands of presentation makeovers, and we're an on-site graphics op for lots of corporate events, which is my happy place. I think it's just awesome. Then in my spare time, I manage a blog on PowerPoint. We do this podcast here, and I take my dog for a walk on most mornings. Hey, guys, if I'm looking a little glisteny, it's because I just got back from that walk, and it's like going to be like 105 today or something. So thanks for inviting me over, guys. What's up with you? Say hi.
Joel, why don't you go?
Oh, hi, guys. I'm Joel. I'm sorry. I'm doing my my meetup voice. No, I'm Joel Simmons. I have been doing presentation design for a long time. I keep saying 20 years. I don't know if it's been that long, but I've been doing it for a while. I'm also known as the presentation guy. My website's presentationguy.com. My Instagram's presentation guy. So I've owned this term. And the way I got that term is I used to work for a temp agency way back in the day when presentation design was not even a profession. I was the only one that really knew PowerPoint well enough to go out on jobs and keynote. I knew keynote and nobody knew keynote. So they were like, hey, let's send the presentation guy out to do some jobs. So I was known as the presentation guy back then and it stuck. Now I'm presentation guy. I have worked for tons of Bay Area companies, lots of tech stuff, Facebook, Microsoft, those kinds of places. I work at Workday now. And I also am a LinkedIn Learning instructor. So I have a weekly course called Presentation Tips Weekly, and I have a couple of other courses as well. And I'm coming out with a new course soon. So please look for me on LinkedIn Learning.
And I'm Nolan Hames. I'm one of the co-hosts of the Presentation Podcast. I had a past life as a performer, director, and writer, but for the past couple decades, I've been a presentation and graphic designer working on the agency side. Now I run my own boutique firm, designing and training clients all across the entire spectrum of industries. Sandy, who are you?
Who am I? Well, first of all, I am jealous of the name Presentation Junkies. That is the best name for a podcast. I really, really like it. But I am one of the co-hosts of the Presentation Podcast. I started my business, Presentation Whiz, which was originally PowerPoint Whiz, but Microsoft lawyers had different thoughts 20 years ago. I came from I had an education in healthcare and a career in advertising. But since that time, I've worked with the largest and the smallest companies in the world to make sure that they PowerPoint responsibly. I was awarded the Microsoft MVP award, like Troy and Nolan. Troy, I think you're before me. I was in 2008. Anyway, a long time ago. And I'm a founding board member of the Presentation Guild.
So I'm Lisa Marie Grillos. Hello. I come to presentation design from visual design. So I was doing print and web design, and I started that about 20 years ago. I was working at a place called Zynga, which they make video games.
That's totally what flashed in my mind.
Yes. Wow. Mafia Wars, Farmville was a really big one. Words with Friends, yes. And there, I was on the brand team. And I started to, we had to actually take care of the presentations for the CEO, which was every quarter. We had a huge party. It was a blowout thing. It was, you know, we'd have circus theme and all these different things. We'd rent out the Warfield in San Francisco. And it was a lot of fun. I think from there, I just got bit by the presentation bug and I did not look back. You know, from there, I started working on Facebook events. And that's actually where Joel and I met. We were working on F8 together and Oculus events. And since then, I went into freelancing. Joel and I worked together at Workday, and now I'm at ServiceNow. Other than that, I have two small children, and I just started playing violin. So that's my thing. Cool. I try to pick up a new hobby every 2 years. So right now it's violin. Oh, and animation. I've been really big on animation since January. 2 years ago, I got my yoga teacher training. And before that, I was a metalsmith. So
look at these overachievers.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but I'm all over the place. You know, I love how you're all very focused. So one day, I'll be like that one.
I am also all over the place. So I think that's why we get along.
Yes. Joel and I are very similar. This is the funny thing about us. And we just laugh. So when we work together at Workday, you had to separate us. I mean, there were times I just had to walk away. So,
And you laugh on your podcast. Yes. It's really fun. It's clear that you're having a good time while you're recording. So, it was fun to listen
so much
to.
Of the laughter out.
Yes, you only hear half of it. Yes.
Well, let's talk about our podcast. But first, I want to talk about your backgrounds a little bit. We both have, you know, the podcast, which is very, very niche in terms of the podcast world. But to break it down even further, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joel and Lisa, you work in a niche presentation world, which is mostly on-site, high-profile corporate events, right? Okay, so let's talk about the style of work, what it entails, how you got there, and we're always interested in origin stories, like how you started violin.
Yes. violin is an easy one. My husband's a musician, and I should have done it years ago, and we could just be on the road, you know, and just doing that thing.
Should have, yeah.
being on site for corporate, I think for me that really started with Zynga because I was in-house, and on our last podcast we were talking about being freelance versus in-house, and you'll see that this is just my comfort zone. So being on site, we had to be on call up to the last minute. And I'm not sure how that is in your world. I'd love to hear about that because I'm not sure if you go on site or if that's a different thing.
Minus the big pause year, I was on site continuously. And on call is when you're there, you're on call. So, but in the studio, I don't know, I kind of work at both ends of the world. So, you know, we have a studio and I'm pretty much on call because I'm the go-to person, because that's what happens when you're one of the owners, you know.
Right.
But being on site means it can still mean a couple of different things, right? I mean, are you designing? Are you running? Mm-hmm. What do you guys do both?
Yeah, I would say, well, first of all, it seems like, you know, you're going on site and you're doing all the work there, but really there's this a whole backstory to it. I mean, we're really working on this for, you know, the Facebook, for instance, we would work these big events like Oculus Connect and F8. And I think we start 3 months out, right, Lisa Marie?
Yep.
So we literally start, and for 3 months, we're just working. We're just in a room working with other designers, just working. And then you go on site, and you're basically on site just for any last minute problems or anything that arises. But just like there's very minimal, like, heavy design on site. So I think it's more like seeing the fruits of your labor when you get there, and just any last minute little hiccups.
I think. Does that mean a lot of times you're just twiddling your thumbs, like waiting to be called?
We can't say that out loud.
No.
I mean, as a designer, like, if unless are there always changes up until the very last minute, or there's sometimes where you're just on call and you're just waiting?
I've definitely had changes up to the night before the event. Where we're on site and everyone is partying in the bar right next to us, right, Joel?
Yes.
And we are heads down at our computers because somebody decided that the talk track needs to change. So there's that kind of thing. There are times when things need to change behind the scenes. So you've already transferred it to the show computers and you need to run over there and make the changes there.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've both probably had the thing where it literally the deck is loaded, the person's about to go out, and it's like, no, we need to change the wording. Mark wants to talk about this. And you have to, like, quickly take the, you know, do a new file and put it up. And it's so scary. You're just waiting for that slide to come up. Like, is it? I hope they got the right slide.
Well, I think Troy relates to that. First of all, I have to give you a lot of credit. I mean, seriously, the events world is something that I have learned to stay clear of. And I admire you both and my friend Troy. Troy, you live and breathe this.
I think we have the same take, but a little different, because we're designer ops. So we are not only running the presentations, we spec a lot of our own, you know, production companies, we partner together. So we end up speccing out all the technical and creating the parameters for large multi-screen or at large aspect ratio. So we're with the production company as much as we are with the client. We're doing it, but we're also doing all the changes. We bring our own design team, or we are the designer. So we don't get that Facebook luxury or Salesforce luxury of having two different teams. You know, we're usually, you know, kind of part of all of it, including video editing and everything else going on. And yes, last minute is a thing. Like last minute, like the presenter's on stage and we're getting updates. Hey, the CEO's numbers have different call outs. You got to update his presentation. He is on stage now. I know he's got six slides. Make the change before he gets there. Like, yep, that happens.
Now, PowerPoint's got a relatively new feature that allows for that, right?
I am so excited about it too.
So does that mean the file needs to be hosted in the cloud, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're using PowerPoint
collaboration. But as you're going through a presentation, somebody else can actually be making edits and on upcoming slides.
Is it only in PowerPoint Live? You know, I know it's in the cloud, but can my desktop presentation be connected to the cloud?
The presentation has to be put onto Teams, but we always run it through desktop PowerPoint. We don't use PowerPoint for web for running anything. But we're collaborating and it's happening more and more. And, you know, we actually moved, like you're saying, Lisa Marie, we moved the deck to the show computers. It goes into a different team. It's called the production. You know, we close out all marketing. No one else can get to the file. It's our version, and we lock the other version, or it becomes a total standalone, and then it becomes harder for those channels.
And of course, in those environments, you also have redundant and backup computers where you can swap between. So you could go to computer two, make a change, come back to computer one. Joel's nodding his head. He's seen that very often, I'm sure.
I'm also laughing because Lisa Maria and I had a experience where there was a you know, they have people that operate the machines.
Yeah.
You know, they're literally, you don't touch the machines, but somebody does it for you. And there was this guy that just didn't know PowerPoint.
Oh.
He was just like,
Oh, wait. Have you seen Zootopia? Oh. And there's the sloth that is slowly kidding. It was just like that. I kid you not.
Go. Like, no. All you have to do is do this. And you can't reach over and like grab the computer, you know, grab the mouse. So we're just like, oh, my God.
So I haven't done too much of that event work, but when I was in my agency days, we would do annual sort of staff meetings, like 600-700 people staff meetings, and we would do the presentations, and I would often end up running them and being on site doing sort of a mini version of that. And I'm not good at running. I get like I was a director, you know, for years in theater. I was good at that. I was not good at stage managing. It was just that pressure and of oh, do I hit it now? Do I go? Oh, is I'm too fast? Oh, like that. That kind of freaks me out. So I always like handing it off to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. It's stressful, but at the same time, I think Lisa Marie and I have identified that we love that. Like we actually thrive on that stress, which is crazy. Who wants stress? But it's you know, we lived and breathed that world for so long, and now we don't get to go on site anymore, so we don't get that rush. Or so I think we're both kind of like, oh man, like what happened? We used to have so much crazy fun, and you know, we're now just kind of, you know, we're just waiting to go back on site again, but thrive on that, I think.
And it's definitely cool seeing your work like on these huge screens and everything. I mean, there's nothing worse than like designing something for a large screen at home, sending it off to the client, not going and say, please send me photos. Like, what did it look like?
Right.
But again, Troy gets to see that all the time, which is cool. Joel, you do a lot of work in Keynote, right? You want to talk about sort of Keynote, Google Slides, PowerPoint, all that?
Yes. Like, oh, my favorite topic. Yeah, I am a Keynote guy. I've been using Keynote for a long time. And I just think I work primarily in PowerPoint, ironically now. You know, at Workday, we use PowerPoint, and mostly everybody uses PowerPoint. But if I find a way to use Keynote, I will still do so. I just think the ease of use is really, you know, there's not a lot of buried menus. It's everything is very laid out. You can do all the same things you can do in PowerPoint. I think the animations are smoother and, you know, the transitions. But at the same time, PowerPoint has come so far. It's come so far, and it's almost neck and neck. And I can even tell you a little preview on Presentation Tips Weekly LinkedIn Learning course. I'm doing a series of PowerPoint versus Keynote, like who is the ultimate champion. So
every episode, interesting.
Yeah. So I'm doing transitions. I'm trying to formulate the other two, but transitions, animations, and then maybe like ease of use and then something else or whatever. But
text-based formatting would be good.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Keynote was the winner for that for so long. And
yeah.
I mean, I have a mixed bag because I've always used PowerPoint, but you know, Keynote's there and have done lots and lots with Keynote, but Keynote just kind of like slowed down. It kind of like became its own thing. I mean, the easy use is because of familiarity. Nothing's changed.
You're
PowerPoint,
right.
The problem is things are changing now almost too fast.
You're right.
Quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially considering Mac versus PC, PowerPoint's really working on getting the Mac version up to speed with the PC version, which I can't wait for some more animation controls. I'm on Mac exclusively. Yeah. I was handed a PC at Workday. I didn't know how to turn it on. So I feel really outing myself.
Well, keep waiting on that animation timeline. But I just wrote an article for a Creative Pro on the top 15 least egregious to most egregious differences between Mac and PC. And so we counted down, and of course, you know what number one is. But it has gotten much, much more. You know, the parity has gotten much, much better. But still, you know, just yesterday, I keep discovering things left and right. Jamie and I yesterday found out something new about, you know, default templates that don't work the same. But anyway,
Sandy, weigh in. What's your Mac take on
things? I gave my Mac away. I mean, seriously, for a lot of those reasons that Nolan talked about in his article. The only time I miss my Mac is when I have to train. And there's inevitably when I'm training, even though I say, okay, everyone's going to be on Windows, Office 365, there are two or three Mac users that sneak in because they don't listen. I don't know. But anyway, I'm 100%
Windows. You got to check ID at the door.
Shots fired.
Exactly. We need to have them sign something.
Well, I used to do most of my training. I always used to design in PowerPoint largely and did some in Keynote. But for my personal presentations, I used Keynote for the longest time until it got to a point where I really started training in PowerPoint. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I got to like walk the walk. And then I was training on my Mac. And then I would look out at a room full of PCs. I'm like, well, I can't have a Mac up here. So now I train on a PC, you know, of course, on PowerPoint.
And you,
all the
well,
time.
So you don't, you're not on your Mac and you don't switch between Windows kind of thing?
No, I don't use Parallels anymore. I had some issues with it, but I know my main, like I'm staring at a Mac right now. My main authoring platform is a Mac, but I've got my PC next to me for when I need to make those animations.
Yep.
And some other things, but
and I think we should all be using PC. I mean, we should all have both. I think, honestly,
yeah.
I mean, it's frustrating that you have to.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
We're like 95% Windows across, you know, all of our staff. We have a few Macs in the studio, and they're used for Keynote projects, obviously, and we get those. We do handling video playback, you know, so Playback Pro system, and really doing cross-platform testing of presentations. You know, hey, how's this thing going to look? You know, this PowerPoint file going to look on a Mac? Because we're handing it off to somebody like Nolan, and he's going to, you know, Lisa Marie, you know, because there are some things that just don't quite translate still. And it's more for when I'm writing how-to articles. Like, what does this do on the Mac again? How do you find that? I got to, you know, go break out a MacBook Pro and look at it and kind of remember.
I'd love to talk about challenges. What kind of clients or projects do you dread? Because I have a few in mind for me.
And they rhyme with.
Exactly.
Joel, break into a jingle for us. I hate these.
These clients need to work on their stuff. I can do better.
What do you think, Andy? Who do you hate? Oh, wait, that's the wrong way to phrase that. At least three is much better.
Who do you hate?
Well, that's funny. Well, I'll start since we're on events. You know, I too have done events, and I used to whine to these two all the time. Every single episode, I would whine about the events I was working on. Here's my take. When it comes to events, I have a problem with presenters who think that they're more important than everybody else. And they're more important than the process, right? You have a deadline and the show date doesn't change. That, you know, you're not going to change that. So you have a hard deadline. You develop a schedule that gets a presenter and 20 to 30 other presenters to that deadline, right? You want to avoid the last minute scrambling that can cause embarrassment and costly mistakes. But like, there's always that five or six who just can't seem to get it together, or they have the notion that the work they do is far more urgent. Am I on a rant, guys? Because
you're speaking the truth. Keep going.
Therapeutic. Get it out.
Well, so thank you. It's making me feel better. They have the notion that the work they're doing is more urgent and important than the other presenters' work. And these same people never get to scheduled meetings. They never meet scheduling draft deliveries, or I should say scheduled draft deliveries. You know, here's the problem. I'm a perfectionist.
Really?
And I learned that after 5 years of conference work that I'm just not cut out for it. The results were always successful. I always had really happy clients, but it's not good for me. It's not good for my health. So more power to you, Joel and Lisa, Marie and Troy.
What you said, though, in that some presenters think that they're more important than other presenters, but they also think they're more important than the process. And for me, the process is very important. I really like to have the script to go off of and get that approved first. And sometimes it just doesn't happen. And that's when you're designing in like a shotgun barrel where you're just, okay, let's see if this works. Oh, that doesn't work. Okay. Let's see if this works. And that just wastes time. Right. Mm-hmm. So I like efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, I'm sure a lot of speakers have been spoiled by Joel and Lisa Marie and people like you, in that you have been able to make that last minute change, that last minute edit when you really shouldn't. But the better speakers, the more mature ones, know that it's not worth the risk at this point of messing everything up, which I'm sure you've also seen happen. I've seen it happen, right? You know, swapping out slides 2 seconds before, something's exactly. gonna go wrong.
Like, wait a minute, not the edit I made, and the presenter's on the stage right. going, yeah. that's not the edit I made. You know,
and then it becomes all about that when right. it, the edit didn't yeah. even matter.
Was it final, exactly. final, final, or final, 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 final? That was the one I gave. The deck. Right. Yeah.
Bullet point number 8 is wrong. Who cares? Nobody's reading them anyway. Sorry.
yep.
Final does not belong in a file name until the event is done.
I agree.
yes.
Even yes. I never use that.
That's and even then, it should be like 48 hours after, because I get revision requests after the, oh, we got to update that so nobody sees it. I'm like, they just saw it. It's recorded.
Too late.
But no, we can't put that out there. I'm like, okay.
Okay. Well, Joel, how about you? Talk about your challenges, your favorites, your worst, your specific experiences.
I have two. And part of it is what Lisa Marie was talking about as far as people that don't respect the process. First of all, you know, you should, when you're working with somebody, it should be very cohesive. It shouldn't be, you know, hierarchy, like I am the speaker and you are the lowly presentation designer and you must do. It's like, let's work together. Let's be collaborative. If you want your presentation to be successful, let's work together instead of you telling me what you want this whole thing to be. You know what I mean? So it's like the more you communicate with me, the more you trust me as a professional, the better everything is going to be, right? So that's right. one thing. That's one mm-hmm. thing. Because, you know, I feel like most people are just like, oh, this artist person, this creative, you know, and they kind of take us for granted. So that's one type of person that kind of irks me sometimes working with. The second are people that don't care about design, and I get it. You know, these people just they care about their words, right, or their bullet points, and they don't really care about the design. They're just like, I don't care. You know, you're like, hey, what did you think about this thing I created? Like, look at this, and they're like, that looks cool. You know, they don't really they don't. It's like. And again,
how am I supposed to talk to that? 3 hours
working on it,
right? Yeah, exactly. How do I? There's not enough there for me to read to know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. We all know that most presenters use their slides as crutches to read off of. But that's what speaker notes are for. That's what speaker notes are for.
Or practice. I don't know. Take your choice.
Yeah. Right. Your practicing is also good, as well. But yeah, you know, it's I think respecting the design sometimes is another difficulty that, you know, we have with speakers. So,
okay, Lisa Marie, what's your dread?
I have a new one which I had never dealt with before the past year, and this is stakeholders who want the deck to look like they designed it. Have you ever experienced this?
No,
this might be
mean?
Internal for my company.
You mean they want it to look bad?
That's what I thought. So you want it to look like
amateur,
but
their personal brand,
right? Well, the thing is that they don't want to go out there and look like marketing. They want to look more authentic. And I come from a background where I've been housed in marketing, and right now I'm not. I'm in a different org, and so it's really about my interpretation of that ask, right? I'm trying not to say, oh, okay, you want it to look bad. It's really more like, oh, you want it to be simple and you want it to be understandable, but I'm going to just put a little bit of a design elegance on it. Mm-hmm. So that's been my challenge over the past year, is trying to make that happen.
I'm still trying to put my head around what they want it to look
right.
like.
You know,
like,
what? So am I sometimes.
I mean, that gets down to any client who knows what they don't want, but they don't know what they want, right?
Mm-hmm,
so right. they can keep saying, no, 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 no. No, you said you wanted minimal. This is minimal. Oh, but that's not what I meant. Well, what do you mean? I don't know. You're the designer. It's like,
right.
Oh, God. Right. Yes.
Everybody knows what they don't want when they see it. They just can't
right.
explain what they do want. So they're just waiting to see it.
My current frustration is clients that want to backdoor requests in. And an example is, I've got this one client wanted an infographic, a super graphic. And this is one of my worst dreads when a client says, we have this very long mission statement or a very, you know, complex process. We want to simplify it with one visual that will explain it all. And I have the conversation. I say, all right, 75% of these jobs get abandoned or are unsuccessful because you want to add in and add in and add in and lots of stuff. And a visual can't do that. You have to take stuff away. And I said, but I'm happy to do it as long as you're comfortable with it. Anyway. So sometimes they'll say, okay, we get it. Well, just design this deck for us. We're not going to do the big visual. And then somewhere in the deck, they'll say, well, can you put in, you know, the four elements of our process? Yeah, here you go. Well, can you connect them? Yeah. Well, can you show the process? And all of a sudden I'm designing that thing that I said, and yeah. And I've been had, like, they got me, and like, I'm
they got you.
Like, how did I step in it again?
Pain in the butt tax. Got to throw it on there.
My biggest dread is when, see if anybody agrees with this one here, is when working through someone else, they're laying out their ideas, they're not getting input from the actual presenter. They've been tasked with here's the information, make the presentation, you'll all review it later. So an executive, a director, and they've handed it off to somebody else, theoretically, you know, below them in the org chart. So you're working with this person, you're just going, this is not right. This is not what they want. Oh yeah, we're going here. You know, then you have to have that awkward review meeting where the presenter says the message or the design or both are just completely all wrong. And I mean, maybe it's a little bit of experience, but I just kind of politely kind of go with the, I just got to explain how we came up with this direction, who provided it, what we executed. And I want to make sure this presentation you're looking at does meet that direction as provided. Inevitably, I get a yes. This is the presentation that would meet that direction. So now that we have an approved direction, Mr. Mrs. Executive, can we meet next week when I execute your options? I just dread this whole middleman thing, and they're just going down. They don't want to get buy off.
Lisa Marie, you talked about taking animation classes. I don't know if that's similar to the violin, just a hobby, or if that's for your presentation. Do you work with a lot of animation? And Joel too, what's the style these days? Is it highly animated, or are people pulling back on that?
It's, you know, with in the before times, it would have been more highly animated, but with Zoom, people don't want it lagging and all of that stuff. I am trying to make animation happen for myself. So I took a course I talked about on our last show, Presentation Junkies. It was called Bring Your Own Laptop. And they had After Effects for presentations. Really cool stuff, just making the graphs jump and, you know, really fun things like that. So I just decided to delve deeper into learning After Effects, learning the principles of animation, which have been really fun. Just, you know, how a ball bounces, how things move, and really looking into that kind of thing. I don't get to use it a lot, honestly, and I'm working towards that. So creating other projects that aren't necessarily part of my my job description or part of the ask from executives, but I'm trying to get them into it, you know?
Yeah, I'm the same as Lisa Marie. I think we both love animation. I think that's my, if I have a strength with presentations, it's animations. That's just my favorite thing. Like I have the imagination of a 6-year-old. So I'm just like, let me just, whatever, you know what I mean? I just literally can see something happening. And as you all, most of the people are listening, if you're a designer, if you can imagine something, you can pretty much make it happen in you know, PowerPoint or Keynote. You know, you just have to figure it out how to make it happen. So I'm the same way as Lisa Marie, as far as what she was saying about the foundations. Like, I like to think, you know, as the slide is as a canvas, you know, it's like a TV screen or a movie screen. So I like to think of it as a filmmaker, you know, so, you know, whatever you're looking at is the screen. So all the elements that are off the screen, these are things that are going to come in. I've even designed slides like that, where it's like, if you've seen like a TV show or a movie where they have like a room and you're looking into the room and then they pan over and you can see like the middle of the wall and then you can see the next door wall to it. I'll do slides like that. So it's like a room and it just like slides over and looks like another room. So, so all that being said, I still animate. I still push it. I will animate all the time. I know Zoom is limiting. You know, everybody has different internet speeds. But at Workday, we use other platforms too for some of our conferences, like ON24, some other ones like that. So they're very reliable video streams. So they don't really jump too much. So So I still animate. I still love to animate. I just can't stand static graphics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that also I get inspiration from movies, from like the end credits,
yes,
commercials, things like that, where I'm always like, wow, that's so cool. I'm going to make that happen in PowerPoint. And it's fun to figure that out.
Yeah. And another thing, even when I'm looking for animation ideas, like a logo animation, PowerPoint or something like that, I'll just go look up an After Effects tutorial, you know, on YouTube, and just try to recreate that in PowerPoint, because you can do most of the same stuff, even though it's not going to be After Effects. But yeah, inspiration is everywhere. So I love just trying to figure something out.
I love animation. I used to animate so much more, and that faded over the years as I started to focus more on storytelling. I don't know. I guess I just didn't need to use it as much. But of course, this last year is the year that killed animation, I think, online. Aww. Not that it won't come back. There's definitely going to be a place for it. But I use less and less, because I don't want to. I've had to rethink it, because we don't know what the receiving end is seeing when we animate. Yes.
I've also heard the opposite, though. Richard Goring on the Click conference last year was saying that he thought that animation should happen. There should be something happening on the screen every 30 seconds or something like that to retain interest.
I agree with that general concept, but Richard and I have had this ongoing argument about this, where it comes up all the time. He thinks like, oh, everybody has gigabit Ethernet. And I'm like, no. It's like, yes, I agree with changing things, and that could be a new slide
change.
Or an appear, or change is different from, you know, slow moving, you know. Or
we love you, Richard.
In Zoom's case, stuttering. Yeah, exactly. He's not here to defend himself. So
I know.
No. But it's a good-natured argument we've had.
I think, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with animation in this day and age. You know, being on Zoom all the time. I think it's just like what you're saying. It's the degree. Like, you maybe complex animations, but you know, if you have some moving elements or something like that, of course they may stutter on some people's, you know, internet connections, but as long as you're not doing too much, because you know, sometimes it'll jitter so much you're just like, what? Oh,
right,
that was over there and now it's over there. I don't know what happened. And you're not even
there's a lot of jumps,
and even just slow fades, if it's slide after slide and each one is like it just gets really annoying.
And also, animation should never be frivolous, and I think that that's what I love about After Effects, is that if a true animator should get in there and touch every keyframe, right? It's the same thing in PowerPoint. You're not doing something just because you want something to be pretty, right? It should have intention.
That's why I love Morph, and that finally, mm-hmm. you know, and PowerPoint's answer to Magic Move. It's actually incredibly difficult to use Morph or Magic Move not to tell a story, right? It's incredibly hard to use it gratuitously, because you're always connecting something. You're always like, mm-hmm. I want to go from here to here, and that's a reason to use. That's a reason to use it.
So Nolan, do you use a lot of animation?
Less and less, just like Sandy. Like I used to do a lot more and just have a lot more fun with it, and I've just sort of pulled back. Although right now we're doing this template I'm so excited about. I just love the design, but we want just this tiny little sort of cute bit of personality, which is part of their logo, or this little ball to bounce in. And it's going to end up being one of the more complex animations, just as Lisa Marie was saying, to have it come in realistically, right? Mm-hmm. This may end up being a rather complex animation, just to have that little ball bounce a couple times and come in, right? Because mm-hmm. I want it to look real. I don't want it to look like PowerPoint.
Yeah, it's got a squish, right?
Squish in there.
And so not being the kind of person that does those squish things all the time now, it's like, like, where were my notes from that session?
And we see so many animation requests, but it's a big part of, you know, where we've positioned ourselves in presentation work. And conversely, just for everybody else listening, we do thousands of medical charts and data slides that have no animation. So, but we you know, obviously get to talk about the animation ones because they're more fun. And you know, it's my happy place, making motion graphics in a presentation. So Joel, where we got to talk was at the recent Creative Pro Week. And my talk there was talking about presenting in this virtual world. And I created a storyline. There wasn't much of a story to that talk. It was thrown together a little bit last minute, but a lot of it was, you got to understand where your end players are coming from. Oh, I'm sorry, Sandy, you actually said that, is, you know, you never know who the end recipient is. And, you know, Zoom is, in my opinion, the worst on animation, just because they have so many, they just have more lags. They drop the quality, you know, to maintain whatever it is. Whereas if you're using a Microsoft Teams meeting, which obviously is not going to be it's going to be a more niche thing, but if you're presenting with your presentation uploaded to the cloud and you're using through there, I mean, their bandwidth throughput is like ridiculously optimized, and I'm going full animation there. Or conversely, if you're like in a Vimeo virtual event where there's a buffering system going on in the background before the end recipient does it, and it auto adjusts their bandwidth, and I'm more apt to use it there. I mean, there's so many variables in it now. It's like, hey, it's not just the program. It's, you got to understand this whole audience. I'm so excited to get back to live events where we can just do things in real. But I agree. I think this has been the hit of a year on animation. I think Lisa Maria is awesome for going into After Effects. We treat PowerPoint now as like After Effects Lite. So we do tons and tons of video work in PowerPoint, export it, and we use it there because it's sometimes faster. And I have a bigger team that can work in PowerPoint than can work in After Effects. So we're, you know, the same principles apply. There's what I was trying to say. Lisa Marie, you're right on. It's the principles and how you treat them.
Exactly. So, squash and stretch, all that stuff. So
it always comes back to the principles. Real quick, the shout out goes to Lawrence Goh. This is my manager at Workday. When you are sharing if you're sharing a presentation or anybody sharing a presentation, on Zoom, there is a check mark for optimized for video once you share, and it will do a pretty good job of making your video or your presentation play a little bit better.
In terms of screen sharing?
Yes, screen sharing. Yes. Sorry.
I've never understood exactly what that does.
We care about frame rate here, not about people talking. So once you click that button, I think it's actually it does something to, you know, make it smoother. So this is a pretty broad question, but, you know, obviously we've had this pandemic in the last year, and it's affected a lot of things. What do you think, and this is a broad question for everybody, of course, what do you think what effect has this had on the presentation design industry going forward? What is the future of presentation design going forward from this? Troy, what do you think?
Wow. That's a broad question there.
Broad.
Deep stuff here. I don't know where you're thinking, Joel, but here's what I'd say. I see a lot of like large corporate events going back to in-person. You know, I think that's going to be our futures. We're going to see more and more of that in-person, but many of the like the live stream and the remote attendee stuff we've been doing entirely this last year, it's going to be an added component. So we're going to have split what we're calling hybrid events. I think we're going to have so many live events coming back online, which is very exciting, but they're still going to maintain some of that virtual esque for the coming years, not just like short term. I think that's going to happen. We have a big one coming up. We have a couple of them in Q4, and they're both, they're set up for the in-person thing, but it's the international attendees that are going to probably not be traveling this year. So they're doing a whole hybrid, you know, remote live stream for primarily that audience. I think that's a big deal. Conversely, and I'd be curious, I haven't talked to anybody about this, but I see a lot of these smaller, you know, kind of those quick meetings, or maybe it's the high level strategy meetings. I think those are going to stay remote because it's just
like
so
sales
easy.
Meeting, you know, thing.
Sales meeting or a CEO, a director debrief, or, you know, discussion on a, you know, creating company policy,
right,
or
fireside,
you
know, chat, something like that.
Yeah. I think a lot of those things are going to, fireside chat. That's a great one. I think those are probably going to stay in the remote because they don't need to gather everybody together. The audience isn't necessarily an easy component to get together. So making it a virtual event. So I think we're going to see virtual go forward, and I think presentation's going to be impacted by it for the long term, but I see us moving back to what we had, and presentation's going to be secondary for the remote audiences. It's not going to be optimized for them like we're really focusing on now. So I don't know. Presentation design, I think they will remain big. Like, we are still important in the world of all these meetings. I just think we're going to be looking at multiple arenas. Is that where you're thinking, Joel? I don't know. There's my big, broad thought.
See, I it's like pitching with a really big softball. If I throw a big softball, you're going to hit it, right? So it's kind of
broad. Out of the park. Right. Yeah, I think the hybrid thing is great, too. I'm all for it because of the accessibility aspect of it, and just kind of democratizing information, right? Giving more access to more people all around and less fossil fuel burning in the getting to a place.
That's so true. Yeah.
There you go.
I agree with the hybrid thing, but I think there's a reckoning coming because while already, you know, some people are at the higher levels are solving or coming up with solutions for to have a quality in-person thing and the remote thing. I think once people start getting back in the office and having, you know, 5 people in the conference room, but then, 10 people are remoting in, I think then people are going to realize, wait a minute, how do we do this? Like, how do we do this? And what's the solution? What is the quote Zoom solution for that easy dual hybrid thing? I think people are going to stand up and say, oh, wait a minute, we now need something. So I think that's the reckoning that's going to be coming because I think there'll always be people remoting in. And I also think training, it's going to be even harder to convince, L&D departments to bring you in person again after this. It was getting harder before the pandemic. Now it's going to be really difficult again. So that's my feeling.
So on that topic, Nolan, I gotta diverge, Joel, from our question. We'll come back. Do you think it's important to be in person if you're doing a learning training?
Yeah, I mean, it depends.
Is it nice or is it important?
Both. I mean, because also it's just you can do a full day training. I think full day remotes just don't work. I know people do
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely,
they don't. So like I max out at like a couple of hours at that. And I can cover 2 hours of material and I can't really take easy questions. I mean, yeah, you can do some sort of back and forth, but if somebody wants to like, show something or whatever, then that's like 10 minutes gone of your 2 hours. So it's all a question of how much material you can cover. And then there's nothing that replaces sort of being in a room and looking over somebody's laptop and getting up to the whiteboard. And, you know, there's something to be said about that.
Yeah. I think that there can also be a rethinking of that education piece. And I've seen it done really well at the place where I'm taking animation classes, which is School of Motion. It's such a great program in that you're really thrown into it. It's a much longer program than one day, but the way they do it really makes your brain think. And so it's kind of like, okay, here's a really hard thing, go do it. And you're just like, but I really learned, you know, so I think that's,
but that's also, awesome. that's definitely a different situation than we're bringing in a trainer for you, for this one day or whatever. I mean, you're going to the mountain, so to speak.
Right. We all understand the importance of that on-site. I think the taste that everyone has had of the perceived lower expense of being virtual it's going to be slower going back. And that's why I think overall, I'll be working in a virtual environment for the next year for my clients. So
there's no question that remote training is still going to be a lower price point. Yeah, there's no travel and all that other stuff. But also, I've been raising my rates without, gently over the last year.
Right.
Now they're not quite to the in-person, but then I don't have a day of travel. I don't have, all that extra time. And so that's good for me. But also from the client perspective, I think they're seeing, it's the virtual training costs more. I mean, what I'm trying to say is 2 years ago, I think they would balk at certain rates that they're not balking at because it is what it is now. That's training. For whatever it is.
So you're saying that there's an argument for charging more for virtual training versus on-site training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then again, you can do a couple of hours and, you can't really do an in-person for 2 hours because then your whole day is shot. The quote hourly rate for you as a trainer in some cases has actually gone up.
I agree with you that the hybrid is the way that it's going to be. And I feel like we just haven't even seen the next step, right? Like you were talking about, Nolan, with the education piece and the training. I feel like we don't know yet. We haven't seen the solution that is really going to work because you can't really work with the people that you're training. You can't see what they're doing and all of that stuff. I feel like this is the beginning and we just have to wait for those developers get on the job. So,
And then, the other just part of that with regard to training or anything is you're going to have clients in which just the people are not in the office, right? So if everybody or a good portion are working remotely, it's not even, I mean, going into the office to train is not even an issue anyway. I mean, maybe it will be, you want to do that remote thing. I mean, I expect I will get a request at some point saying, come into our office to train 10 people, but then another 10 people will be joining remotely. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to have to figure out how to do it.
Right. Yep.
I know one other thing I wanted to mention as far as the future goes is actually the futuristic kind of stuff that we're starting to see with these hybrid, with these virtual environments. A lot of these big, you know, big tech companies are doing, like Snapchat. If you ever get a chance to see Snapchat's annual company meeting, you can go on their site and see it. I mean, I'm talking like green screen studio, but it's like 3D, like they have cameras everywhere. So, you know, your slides are literally like behind you, or they're like, you know, on some fake wall back there or whatever. And they're zooming around and the slides moving everything too. That's extreme. And it's very, very expensive to do that kind of stuff. But even on smaller scales, you have, you know, things like, I hate saying that name.
Sandy's favorite.
I know they must, I can't imagine working there and just like, hello.
You don't want to be the jingle, Joel. They need the jingle.
Yeah, there you go. But if anybody has used that, it's actually pretty cool. I mean, it's not as customizable as I'd like it to be, but I think they're working on it. They already they were in a beta and now it's better, but you know, you can move your slide, you know, the slide is behind you and you can move it left to right and you can make it full screen and you're basically like a one person show operator and you're moving stuff around. So, you know, maybe that's the future. I don't know. I'm sure a lot more companies are going to try to get in that space and release these kind of apps. So, no, we'll see. This show is sponsored by
Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Lisa Marie. This is what we were all about, just talking presentation. And presentation is such a broad spectrum. So thank you for the opportunity to talk shop with some people that participate in the same part of that spectrum as I do. You know, the whole live events and stuff like that. It's been awesome. Nolan, Sandy, this has been a super fun day. Hopefully everyone joining us, you're having a great day as well. I mean, it's been fun. Hopefully I promised it up front and there's been some laughs and stuff. Hey, thank you for spending some time with us, for talking presentation. Mention the Presentation Podcast to your friends. Mention the Presentation Junkies Podcast to your friends and coworkers, because these are the people that you want to listen to and we want to hang out with you. Hey, thanks so much. Hey, we're not actually done. We're going to jump into Pro and Tech Tips.
Pro and Tech Tips. No, it's okay.
All right, so we do sort of a speed round of pro and tech tips, and I'm going to start with the couple places that I go for printing for like my holiday cards and note cards and also photo books. So the one I use for all my holiday cards is paperculture.com, and they're just a really nice just good sort of smaller company. I've had just really good experiences with them, and I'm able to design. Here's just a tip with them. You can upload JPEGs, you know, and do your sort of custom, which is what I always do, or they have their templates. But if you get in touch with them, they'll actually take a print ready PDF. So that's always what I do. So I just design and InDesign, whatever, send them, and their prices are fantastic and they're really good. So that's paperculture.com. And then when I need to make photo books, I think they do them, but I go to Printeak. It used to be Adorama Pics, I think, but Printeak, PRINTIQUE. And I just, again, the quality and the pricing, I think, is really good there. So those are my two printing tips.
Oh, that's great. Adorama's been around for a long time. It was a shop in New York. So
definitely.
To know that they changed their name.
It's still Adorama, but their print side, they changed. They sort of branded it. Yeah, but I used to go into Adorama to get my, you know, print books, and now they're just a whole different thing. Sandy, what do you have?
Okay, so my pro tip is we all know lorem ipsum generators. In PowerPoint, you type, I can't remember what it is, of course, off the top of my head, but you can do it in PowerPoint even. My recommendation is for order free random names. It's a fake name generator. So for example, in your PowerPoint presentations, you need to have fillers rather than lorem ipsum. You need fake names. You need fake addresses. You can use this fake name generator. We'll put the link in the notes. I should give credit where credit is due. This came from a conversation we were having in the MVP chat. I cannot remember who offered it up, but I think it's really, really cool. So click on the link, go there. You can choose, like I said, addresses, fake zip codes. It's really a fun tool to be using.
It's a great idea. I thought you were going to say Bacon Ipsum, which is a website that I love using.
There you go. It's even
I like
better.
The Pirate Ipsum.
Yeah,
that it's Arg Ipsum. Yes.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Joel?
I have two, but I'll just do one. I'll just do one for lack of time. You know, this is unexpected. This is a last minute decision, but I purchased a this is a hardware tip here. I got the new iPad, the with the new Mac chip. What is it? Oh, I can't believe I forgot.
The M1?
The M1 chip. How could I forget? Mac fanboy. And I usually take my laptop everywhere I go. Even though I was off, I took that as a replacement for my laptop, and I got the new keyboard. There's a new $300 yes. keyboard that comes with it. And it really, I mean, I used it for PowerPoint. I actually I edited video in Premiere on my iPad. And it worked flawlessly. I mean, and you know, it's like you can play a game, then you can watch a video, then you can go into PowerPoint, then you can design, you can edit video, and it was flawless. So I am just giving a shout out to Apple and their new iPad Pro. It was stellar. So that's cool. Yeah, that's my tip.
Okay, you just bumped my tip up one. So I want to say Illustrator for iPad is excellent. I really like the features that they've developed there. But the two that I was going to mention are a couple of books that I've been reading. And one is Essentialism. Have you read this? By Greg McKeown, I think, or McKeon. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's a great book just on the disciplined pursuit of less. So, and that's something I need, obviously, since I'm always talking about how busy I am. I'm just going to, you know, start to say no selectively. And another one is Digital Body Language by Erica Dewan. I'm in the middle of this one. Some of it is pretty, you know, stuff that I kind of knew before, but some of it is just like really good tips on living in this world that we're living in now.
Nice.
How about you, Troy?
Okay, mine's really, really straightforward, easy, and it's partially, I had to update something. So the problem in PowerPoint, okay, it's a problem in Keynote, but Keynote treats this situation a little differently, is hidden slides. Keynote just, you know, they're just gone. They're a little blip. They're a little line. You can't see them unless you click on them, which I actually think is a different part of the problem. It's still a problem. But in PowerPoint, you know, they have these little teeny, you know, the little slash through it. It slightly dims it. And on a printout, there's no indicator that it's hidden. So way back in September of 2006, I had to go look for this. I added a ping image. So we create a hidden. It just literally is a ping image. It's full frame. It says hidden. We drop it on top of every slide. So in a printout, you just see this nice watermarked hidden. In a slide sorter view, you see hidden. And I just kind of thought everybody used this. Well, it took me a while to realize as we're doing all these, you know, Zoom meetings and everything else, you know, hidden, we keep doing it because people don't know what's live and what's not, because everybody's reviewing it in slide sorter view and they can't see the little teeny hash mark that it's gone, you know, because it's even smaller. So I just updated it. It'll be the June 28th blog post. It's the exact same hidden ping. It's 16:9, so it just drops right onto slides. There's also a slide you can download where I've added the animation. So the problem is with hidden ping is if you've got to manually go to that slide, you know, you pump type in, you know, slide 28, enter, it'll show a big hidden ping because, you know, you want that there. So we have the disappear, the appear disappear combination. So it's gone. So you can, you know, still use it as a stealth slide available. Anyways, there's my tip. It's a hidden ping overlay. It's a feature, we'll just say PowerPoint kind of overlooked because their little options don't really help you out. And June 28th blog post, it's there. Download it, make use of it, make everybody jealous that you can actually tell what's hidden and they can't.
Nice. And we'll add a link to the blog post. We'll add a link to the blog post.
I will do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional presentation design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. Check out our blog at thepowerpointblog.com. And if you're new to listening to us, check us out as a podcast at thepresentationpodcast.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Haynes Creative. You can find me at presentyourstory.com and nolanhaynescreative.com if you're looking for training or design work. Give me a call.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz. Find me at the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as at PPTWhiz.
This is Lisa Marie Grillos with the Presentation Junkies. I really have nothing to plug here. You can find me on LinkedIn, though, and at alittleflea.com. And please email both Joel and I at presentationjunkies@gmail.com. We love hearing from people.
Yep, this is Joel Simmons, also from Presentation Junkies. You can find me on LinkedIn Learning by my name, Joel Simmons. And my name is spelled J-O-L-E. It is not a mistake. That is how it's spelled. You can also find me at presentationguy.com. My unupdated site there hasn't been updated in years. You can go find me there. And you can also find me on LinkedIn as well. And I'm always taking questions and want to talk shop. So reach me there. Real quick, I just have to say, it has been a pleasure being with you guys and learning from the greats. We are just young Padawans here trying to learn
Padawans,
this podcast thing. And we did it as an experiment. And it's so great to see, to work with you pros here.
It's been impressive. Yeah. I just thank you so much for the opportunity.
It's huge.
Oh, man. You guys thanks so for giving us
our honor. Thank you.
I also have to tell you, I was walking through the woods when I was listening to your show where Nolan, you mentioned our show Presentation Junkies, and I about tripped over a log. I was like, wow.
She texted me right away like, oh my god, you mentioned this.
Well, you've mentioned ours too. I've been in similar situations.
Of course.
Yeah, it's always fun. And just for clarity, for everybody knows, we started the podcast as an experiment. It's just still going as an experiment.
What did you say? 1 year? I can't remember what it was.
6 months. I gave it six months. Like, hey, guys, okay, we're going to do this for 6 months. We might extend it a year. We'll see what happens. Season 5 coming up on season 6, wow, which is a year. Coming up on 6 years of this
podcast.
This is 120. Uh-oh, where are we at here? 120.
Nine?
Help me out.
120. Oh, it's a.
This is 129. Yeah, this is episode 129. Yep. We do two a month.
We are in episode 9. So we have 120 to go to catch up to you guys. But we'd love to learn from you guys. This is so helpful. It's so great.
Oh my gosh. Thanks for joining us. I'm gonna we'll hit stop. We'll keep talking amongst ourselves a bit. And this has been fun. Everybody, thanks for joining us again. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available from the Presentation Podcast website at thepresentationpodcast.com. Also, through the website, contact the show hosts with episode suggestions, questions, or comments. We want other designers to join us, and you can help. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated, and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.